Welcome to It's About Florida, a monthly discussion program tackling the key topics of interest to our state. I'm Lynn Hatter. Today, we're speaking with House Speaker Steve Crisafulli and Senate President Andy Gardner. Our conversation comes 2 weeks before the start of the annual lawmaking session, and already there are bills moving through both chambers. Lawmakers will have to decide whether to accept billions in federal funding to ensure more Floridians and whether to renew a deal on gambling with the Seminole Tribe of Florida. Our conversation with the state's top legislative leaders is coming up on It's About Florida. Well, Mr. President, thank you for coming on It's About Florida.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. So I want to talk about some of your priorities, and I know you guys went through them at AP Day at the Capitol. Out of everything that you talked about, what do you feel is number one?
Well, the joint agenda, you know, certainly, you know, we've made an effort over the last couple of years to help individuals with a lot of people say disabilities, but we look at it as individuals with unique abilities. You know, we've made some changes to the education system, inclusion, and so, you know, thankfully, working with the speaker who I've known for years and is a good friend, we were able to lay out really some great opportunities for individuals with unique abilities. So that probably was the number one. The other piece of the joint agenda that I think really will drive everything is the implementation of Amendment 1. When you really start looking at how that's going to work and the distribution of the money, that will really kind of drive the whole debate when it comes to water policy and natural resources. So the Speaker and I are both committed to trying to do something that really isn't just a one-year fix, but really could set the stage for the next 20 to 30 years.
Amendment 1, that was the constitutional amendment proposal that voters approved by 70%+ that said, hey, state of Florida, we want you to designate money to land conservation and environmental issues. Now, this has kind of turned into a bit of a fight in the legislature. You've got a lot of people who see a lot of money, and everybody wants to put their 2 cents in there.
Sure.
So how are you guys planning on navigating that?
Well, the first thing, and we started this week when we Chairman Charlie Dean rolled out legislation that really kind of builds the underlying structure. We think it's very important for the monies that the voters understand where the money is and that it's easily tracked all the way down to the project and whatever you decide, whatever the legislature decides is the best, working with the advocates to make that happen. So the legislation pretty much creates the account for all that money to go into. And we think that that's important. You know, over the next 20 years, the voters should be able to say, I voted for Amendment 1, and here's specifically what we were able to accomplish. Once you've created that structure is when you really start getting into the discussion of how that money is to be spent. Doc stamp money, you know, we're talking about $757 million, or give or take, is kind of the number that we're looking at. There's already existing environmental programs and doc stamps that meet the Amendment 1 requirement. So you continue to do that. There's Everglades spending and there's some other aspects, but then you get into what else should we be doing. Something I've advocated for is bike trails and parks and really access to the existing public lands that we already have. Voters should not only be looking at, hey, Amendment 1 should do X, Y, or Z, but what are we already doing? And, you know, those are the type of things that over the next 60 days as we go through the legislative process, we're going to hear from a lot of people. In the Senate, we actually set up a website that you can go and give us your comments. I think we've had over 4,000 comments that have been submitted already. That helps us to make the right decision. So we'll be held accountable, and you know, I think we're up to the task.
What's the website?
It's flsenate.gov.
Is there something that, you know, the proponents, the people who backed Amendment 1 have said that we don't want the money going to things the state is already supposed to be funding. We want it to go toward mostly land buying issues and other things like that of that sort. Is there something that you say or where you draw the line that says, no, this money should not be going toward rooting out septic tanks?
Well, I don't – number one, it's the presiding officer. I'm not sure it's my role to specifically say that. I think that's why we had the committee mm-hmm. with Chairman Dean and Senator Simmons and Simpson. They'll kind of work through that, but I think they should be working with the supporters of Amendment 1. The reality is if you decide that all that money should go into land purchasing, you really start to run out of options when it comes to how much property can you purchase. in Central Florida, where I represent, I think that there's a very good case that could be made for springs cleanup and water cleanup. You know, those have just as much of an impact, and land purchase too, if there's sensitive land. But I think if we're going to look at this and we're going to look at it right, we should really take a holistic approach. The constitutional amendment provides that. It, you know, when I talk about bike trails, you know, the, clearly the constitutional amendment allows for that to be a financial use. And so we just hope to have all that discussed and really lay out a framework so long after I'm gone and the rest of us that voters can look back in 20 years and say, here's specifically what we got with Amendment 1.
Senator John Legg released his blueprint for how to proceed with something that's weighing heavily on a lot of people's minds, which is standardized testing in our public schools. He has proposed, as well as Senator Don Gates, scaling back on that. And I'm curious to know what you see coming down for the future of many of these tests that the Florida legislature put in place.
Yeah. I've had discussions with Chairman Gates and with Chairman Legg, and I've encouraged them to move forward with the discussion. You know, certainly we're going to want to hear from the advocates on all sides. I think what, whether it's Senator Gates or Senator Legg, the one thing that there is a very strong belief is that we don't want to lose the accountability. And there are those that just say, do away with all tests. And I'm not sure that the support is there. We need to understand if students are actually learning within the year what they need to. It's good to hold people accountable, and we're all held accountable in our jobs. And I think Senator Gates and Senator Legg will come up with a pretty good proposal that keeps the aspects of state testing, but still understands that, you know, it shouldn't dominate every part of the day. And I think that's going to be the dialogue over the next 60 days.
What's your view of the opt-out movement? There have been several across
the
state.
Yeah, there's been a lot. And, you know, the reality is, you know, and I think the secretary and others have made it pretty clear, you can't opt out of the statewide testing. You know, it jeopardizes potential federal funding, state funding. And I think the speaker has mentioned this as well, but we hear people. You know, clearly there's some discussion that needs to happen. And I also get concerned when people are trying to opt out or encouraging kids to opt out. What impact is that having on that child in their attempts to go to college and various things like that? But, and again, with my discussion with the chairs, we've really talked about, okay, let's look at this. We've heard it everywhere we go. We're hearing from families that are talking about not necessarily the testing. There are some that don't want the test at all, but then there are some that we're spending all of our time testing. And we've even gone so far as to start to talk about, okay, well, what's the state tests? But then also, what are the locals? You know, a lot of the tests are also just local tests that maybe they're preparing for the state test. And those are the things that we just, you know, we're talking to all sides to see, you know, how do we all get to a comfort level where we are.
Another pressing issue that you guys are going to weigh in on soon involves the state of Florida's prisons. We've heard a lot of things coming out in the last 2 weeks, problems with staffing in the state prisons, problems with facilities deteriorating in the state prisons. You know, how confident are you that lawmakers, you know, will look at this and, you know, actually pass a bill that makes some real systemic changes?
Well, I think in the Senate, you know, Senator Evers has been a real leader on this as chairman of the Criminal Justice Committee. The first hearing will be this week on his legislation that really starts to address some of these issues. I think he's actually having the secretary come back and continue to have dialogue. We take it very, very seriously. And we started in my discussions with Senator Evers 2 months ago. When I asked him to chair the committee, I asked him, you know, I want you to take a leadership role in this. This is something that has been around for a long time, and we're prepared to try to tackle it. So we, in the Senate, we start this week with the rollout of a proposed committee bill. I think you'll see things added to that bill as we build it, as we go. We're still waiting for some recommendations from the department on what they would like to see added to that. I think it could be one of the bigger issues that we end up doing this year. And I think Sir Evers is really doing a great job of trying to bring the sides together to get some things addressed.
A couple of places where you and House Speaker Steve Crisafulli are sort of breaking on, one involves state pensions. Mm. And I just want to start off with those, and that's something that concerns a lot of state workers. Florida is a major employer of Florida, you know, and obviously the pension issue is fairly big. What is the Senate's why has the Senate historically been reluctant to look at state pensions?
Yeah, I think the pension issue sort of crosses party lines. You know, certainly, you know, we have a lot of senators that have a lot of state employees, a lot of rural communities that have some concerns about a statewide reform. I don't think the votes have changed in the Senate. If you've followed this process but want a statewide reform, it's been 2020 and or, you know, maybe even a little bit worse. You know, but as we've said, we're open to dialogue. There's always going to be suggestions. If the House has some ideas, we're certainly going to look at that. The second piece of that is more of the local pension issue that the cities, actually Senator Bradley had legislation last year that passed unanimously out of the Senate. The House has indicated that they're going to split those two issues before they were combined into one. So we hope we can address the local pension issue, but the statewide, it, you know, the votes haven't, I'm not sure the votes have changed in the Senate, but, you know, again, it's early. We haven't even gotten into session yet, so maybe something pops up.
And as you noted, there is a lot more consensus on the issue of local pensions, and I think we heard Senator Jeremy Ring and his committee, you know, really going after the cities for some of the things. They had an agreement with the local police and firefighters last year. It's kind of melting down this year.
Yeah.
So that, but there is more consensus on that end. The second issue that you guys are sort of breaking off on is this question of a Medicaid expansion in Florida. Mm-hmm. And it's the perennial question, will they, won't they? You know, we've heard from the speaker who says, you know, I don't see that interest in my chamber, but obviously there is interest in your chamber. Mm-hmm. Do you see any way forward on this between the two of you?
Well, it's still early. You know, I think it's Medicaid expansion, but I also think that, you know, there's another issue that's bubbling out there. It's a low income pool and IGTs, and you know that is a significant amount of money that goes into healthcare. I think it's close to $2 billion, which there's no guarantee that we're going to be able to continue to do that because of some new federal guidelines. So, you know, my hope would be that we could have a significant discussion about whatever we want to call it, but looking at this Medicaid issue. You know, one of the things that I think has, at least on our side, changed a little bit of the dialogue is you had Indiana that just recently was given some waivers to allow for premium payment, which is, you know, part of that personal responsibility that we've heard is a concern about Medicaid. But I do think what is a legitimate discussion is, you know, we shouldn't look at Medicaid as something to strive for, to put as many people on. But how do you give them the ability to have that personal responsibility and then move into the private sector insurance pool? And, you know, as the speaker said last week, he's a never say never guy, and neither am I. I think that, you know, we have an obligation to really start that discussion. I think you'll see that discussion in the Senate. And as we get closer to budget time, we'll see if there's any opening to have some type of an agreement.
Has there been any conversation about what's going to happen with the Seminole Gaming Compact?
Well, right now, you know, keep in mind, it's not the entire compact. Mm-hmm. It's just a very small portion of the compact. And right now in our budget, and I think in the governor's proposed budget, we anticipate that going away, that revenue going away. You know, we're waiting to see if there's any type of dialogue or discussion on some type of an agreement, whether it's through the governor or any dialogue with the House and the Senate. I think it's too early to tell. I do think that there are a number of members that are prepared for that revenue to go away. And it's about $125 million a year, but right now we're not even budgeting for it. So we'll just have to see if something come forward that everybody could agree with.
Well, Mr. President, thank you so much for joining us today on It's About Florida.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to It's About Florida. We've been speaking with Senate President Andy Gardner on his vision for the 2015 legislative session, and we resume the show now with House Speaker Steve Crisafulli. Well, Speaker, thank you so much for joining us here on It's About Florida.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
I think what I want to know is, you know, if there is one thing that you want to get done during the upcoming legislative session, what is that one thing?
Well, ultimately, and it's no secret that I've had a great focus on water, and making sure that we can provide a clean, abundant water source for the future of our state is important to me. I come from a agricultural background and recognize the need to make sure that we have it for that industry, but it's also important to make sure we have that for the future growth of our state, for tourism, for development, for our families that will depend on that product here in the future. So that's a big focus of mine in trying to modernize our statutes to do just that.
So let's start there and break down this water issue, because part of it revolves around the passage of Amendment 1 that is a set aside for money that goes to conservation efforts. And there are a lot of fingers in that pot. Do you have a specific place where you'd like to see these dollars go?
Well, my understanding of the amendment is basically for the maintenance and purchase of land and water. Mm-hmm. And my focus, first and foremost, is maintenance. Right now, the state or government, for better term, owns about a third of the property in the state. One of the biggest challenges we have is maintaining that property. So for me, the biggest focus is the maintenance of the property that the state currently owns versus needing to buy more property. Now, I recognize that there will become an opportunity to purchase other properties to connect wildlife corridors or to use for water storage or something like that. But ultimately, my goal would be to see more go into that side of things versus buying more land.
Another major issue you guys are going to be dealing with is prison reform. That's kind of a broader way of describing several of the different issues going on with our prisons. A couple of lawmakers did a drop-by to some prisons, and they found some problems. They found, maintenance issues. They found safety issues. Recent reports have said there's aging equipment, and there have also been reports of prisons having to go ask the public for assistance. How are you guys planning to address that issue? Because you've got a couple of different things happening, everything from staffing to the physical deterioration of state-owned buildings.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, for us, it's the most important thing is understanding what those challenges are. I know several conversations have taken place over in the Senate. There will be some that take place over here in the House. I have charged Chairman Metz to head up the judiciary silo with regard to appropriations, mm-hmm. and look at the challenges that are out there and try to make sure that the dollars that are spent here from Tallahassee go to the right place to accomplish the right things. And, it has become a hot topic. It is something that we're going to be looking at along with, a gluttony of other issues that are out there. But certainly that's one that rises to the top of that silo of issues.
Do you foresee a need for more state dollars?
We have to see what the challenges are there. If it's more money, then where is it? How is it going to be used? I will tell you that, to my knowledge, we have never denied that agency the funding that it's needed to be effective in its mission. So, for me, it's making sure that those dollars that we do appropriate go to the right places, and there's an accountability standard for that. And I think, that'll be up to the committee to decide the best approach for that.
Is there anything you're not willing to talk about? Any proposals that you foresee coming across that you're just going to say no to?
Well, first and foremost, I'm willing to talk about anything now. Whether or not we bring it into the legislature is a different conversation. You know, right now, Medicaid expansion is not something that we're focused on here in Florida, and that's something that we will talk about it, certainly, mm-hmm. but it's not something that we're going to be talking about in the process as we sit here today. I've said it before, I'll say it again. You know, I'm a never-say-never kind of person because I believe that, you know, there's always opportunities for something, but as we sit here today with the product that is before us, we will not be having a conversation on that issue this year.
So does that basically mean that's dead on arrival if it does come up?
If it comes up today, it's dead on arrival. But again, there's always conversations that can take place in this process, whether it's, you know, Medicaid expansion or whether it's, you know, doing something with the managed care program that we currently have in Medicaid that bolsters that program. You know, we're trying to make sure that what we do is right for the future of the state. And, you know, we had this conversation on the floor 2 years ago with regard to Medicaid expansion. We learned a lot from it at that point in time. Last year, we did nothing on the issue. It's becoming another issue, you know, another year that we're talking about it early on. But we've come a long way with the flexibility that's been provided from Washington. But ultimately, for me, putting people into a broken system is not the answer. I think fixing the system is the answer, and I've been very interested in seeing how our managed care Medicaid package has been working over the last year or so, and I'm interested to see how that continues to work.
Let me ask you this question. People have been talking a lot about the deal that Indiana got. Mm-hmm. The federal government allowed them to do some things that you all had considered in the past but were rejected. And at the time, I'm thinking specifically about the copay provision. That's essentially something that the state of Florida wanted in its managed care system that was rejected. Do you see a way forward on this issue to ensure the people who are still falling in the coverage gap to possibly expand the Medicaid managed care program, if you could get some of those premiums and some of those copays and work within that context and still not have to pull down?
You know, to us, it's obviously far more than that. I mean, we put out a plan a couple of years ago that we felt covered those mm-hmm. that needed to be covered that were in the coverage gap. Beyond that, you know, we could talk about the benchmark plan. We can talk about the work component. We can talk about block grants. You know, there's multitude of things that you can talk about with regard to flexibility. And they have been talked about. I mean, you know, you have the Indiana piece that came out. You had Utah who got rejected for the work plan. You have Tennessee who just put one in place that is now being talked about as just being another, you know, form of Medicaid expansion. So there's a lot of things that we could put on the table, but, you know, ultimately the House currently is postured in the place that we are not to do anything because, you know, I'm more focused on mm-hmm. trying to make sure that our managed care product is working right for those that have access to that.
Do you think it is?
I think the results are good early, yes. You know, but we still have a long ways to go to know whether or not we have a great product.
Do you see places for improvement within the current managed care structure? I know I've heard from physicians who say they're running into payment problems with the providers, and I know there is still the issue of children, although it's a lot better now, children are still, you know, struggling. They get on the Medicaid rolls and they fall off. That still kind of remains an issue.
Well, I think with anything that you have a fresh start with, you're going to have some bumps in the road along the way, and I think that this is another one of those situations, but I certainly feel positive that the product that is in place can be continue to be worked on to make it better. And just like anything, you can continue to find ways to be more effective with your products. And I think that will be our focus with regard to the managed care program that we have.
Are you guys looking at reviving some of the what I call the scope of practice battles, basically? You know, giving nurse practitioners additional authority. I know that there have been telemedicine bills that would allow, you know, doctors and others to use video technology to treat patients remotely. how are those factoring into the conversation?
To your point, the telemedicine conversation has, come to the surface again. There's been some concessions made by both sides that I think are positive, which will allow a bill to potentially move forward. With regard to scope itself, it's early. Mm-hmm. And, there will be members that have an interest with regard to that issue, and we'll see how that plays out through the committee process.
What do you think about the idea of allowing Medicaid to have telemedicine as a reimbursable expense?
I'm interested to see how that would work out. First and foremost, you have to have a program that works. Access isn't a problem, and the deliverable is ultimately what you're looking for. And for me, I got to get my arms around telemedicine before I figure out whether or not it's something that we can implement into a managed care program.
Where does the House stand on the issue of standardized testing? Senator Legg has already rolled out his version of what he wants to see, capping the amount of school time that can be spent on tests, dialing some back. And something that might get a little thorny is reducing the weight of the testing data on teacher evaluations down from 50% to 40%. Mm-hmm. How are you guys feeling when it comes to this particular issue?
Well, I will say personally, I'm a strong proponent of standardized testing from the standpoint of not over-testing, but effective tests that meet the needs of measuring student performance. And I think what we need to be looking at is making sure that there's consistency from the state to the districts and there's not a duplication of testing along the way. And I think we've seen a lot of that take place, from district to district and overlaying what the state currently has. So for us, it's about taking this opportunity to look and see where we can clean that up. But from the standpoint itself of the testing, I think that knowing that there's an opportunity to measure our students, make sure they master certain subject areas is very important. So I think finding that balance is what we're going to look to accomplish this year in this process.
And my final question for you is, what do you believe is going to be the heavy lift issue that you all will have to deal with this session?
The one and only heavy lift issue, huh?
The heaviest one out of the list of heavy, who weighs more?
I will say that if the issue of gaming comes up, that would be the issue that would probably be one of the heavier lifts of this session. Now, with that said, that issue has not come up yet. So, we're going to obviously pay attention to the issues that are out there, work on those that are before us, as we sit here today, but understand that there could be a component of gaming that comes along that ties in the compact and the paramutuals and, whomever else wants to jump into this conversation. But it will be, it'll be an issue that brings a lot of emotion, a lot of, community involvement, whether it's South Florida or Tampa or what have you. And obviously we have an interest in Orlando that, doesn't necessarily want to see the state expand. So, so we're going to, potentially have that conversation again. It hasn't come to this level yet, but if there is something that comes up this year that's a heavy lift, that would certainly be it.
Well, Mr. Speaker, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us on It's About Florida.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks to House Speaker Steve Crisafulli and Senate President Andy Gardner. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. I'm Lynn Hatter. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance. Please join us next month for more discussion on the issues impacting our state.